Welcome to the Dark Side of Soul podcast. This is Joe.
This is Sean.
Welcome to our introductory episode. We run the Dark Side of Soul Ghost Walk over here in lovely Seoul, Korea. You can go to our website, darksideofsoul.com, if you wish to book a tour with us. Also, we suggest you join our Facebook page. Just search for Dark Side of Soul on Facebook, where we have regular watch parties where Sean will host a classic horror film.
Yeah.
And then if you feel like chatting, we also have our chatbot, Minji the Ghost, who is quite the mischievous little ghost, if you want to talk to her. Quite entertaining. She even has a little choose your own adventure game if you want to play. So anyway, hello, Sean.
Hey, Joe. How's it going?
It's going.
How's your COVID-19?
Yes, we are recording on March 21st, Seoul time. We're still in the midst of quarantining, even though things are looking better now.
Absolutely. Compared to a month ago, yeah.
I did a small tour last night. We took all our precautions, and it was really good. But while I was out, I did notice, around 90% of people still wearing masks, but I'm seeing less people wearing masks than before. Bars were still happening. Restaurants were still happening. We went out for chicken and beer after the tour last night, and it was the busiest I've ever seen that place. It's looking better here. It's looking better here.
You mean the busiest recently or the busiest ever?
I usually go to that chicken place. If I'm going there, it's really, really late and we're sort of like the last customers.
Okay.
So we did it, and I love this little chicken joint. It's always a good sign when you go to a Korean chicken place and you're the youngest people there. That's a sign of good chicken.
Right. Yeah. And I find them a lot of the restaurants when I do my post hike eating and drinking. It's often a good sign that the restaurant's full of old, hardened Korean mountaineers.
Yes.
So when they're going to the same restaurant for the last 20 years at the restaurant, but however old the restaurant is, it could have regulars that have been going there as long as it's been open.
Right.
So
it's the best.
Yeah, always.
So today we're going to talk a little about the background of the tour. And what we have planned for our podcast. First off, what do you want to do? You want to talk about the origins of the tour? You want to talk about what we have planned for the future?
Well, let's for people who are just kind of getting to know us through the podcast itself, they've never been on the tour before, maybe they're just curious about what this podcast they're seeing, this new podcast, what this whole thing is about. But let's give them some background on the tour, some history of the tour.
All right. This is we started the tour in 2012. My background, I studied Korean history at university. Sean has a Korean folklore background. What it was is I was starting off making a food tour company. I did a business class run by the Seoul City government, and at the end we did like a Shark Tank style competition, and I was awarded a incubation office and all the support. And I was starting my food tour company, and I was just researching more ideas, and I was like, we don't really have a ghost tour. We don't really have like a Jack the Ripper tour here. It's something we don't have. Also, I had nothing. I'm a big fan of Halloween, and at the time there wasn't that much to do on Halloween. And the other thing was just my frustration, because one of my attractions to Korea was its history.
Right.
And then I get to all these places I've heard so many stories of, and I read the plaques, and it's just totally sterilized. It's you go to this place where you knew some murder happened, and it says, oh, this building is 25 meters long and 10 meters wide. It has 12 columns.
Oh, but, like, but, but they give you the dimensions in the ancient Korean dimension system. So it's Kan or Li, things like
that. Yeah, that's helpful.
It's that even modern Koreans can't relate to it.
It's it's technically correct, but it was written by an engineer that looked like they were trying to pass some type of SAT test.
Right.
That's part really
of my studies. I study heritage is the focus of my studies with folklore. And one of the main things that I study in heritage interpretation is how to write those interpretive signs, those plaques, properly.
Oh, okay. So,
a lot of them are not written properly.
Okay, I would guess.
Yeah.
I would guess. So it stemmed from that frustration. I personally, I've always wanted to go on something like a Jack the Ripper tour, but I've never been on one. So I wasn't sure how to put together a ghost tour. So it took me at least a year of research. I was talking to historians. I was doing a lot of research on the internet in English and Korean. I was checking so many websites, from newspapers, old articles, even K-pop sites. Was getting a lot of things from that. And anytime I found something, I was getting all these old maps and I was superimposing them on Google Maps to pinpoint locations. And after a year, I had so many points, I was able to connect the dots and I came up with a tour route. And I tested it out right in early October 2012. And I was really surprised that people liked it because I just invented it out of nothing.
Right.
And over the years, it's gotten, I've been honing it. We've been honing it. My idea was behind this was, it's always about the storytelling. I kind of based it a little bit on the Jungle Cruise at Disneyland, in the sense that I do a lot of silly jokes on it just to keep people entertained. And
yeah.
And just to know, it's not super serious. It's not super scary. It's kind of always like the Haunted Mansion at Disney.
Right.
It's all about having an engaging story.
Right. Right. And that's, a lot of people in tourism studies and heritage studies and whatnot, they'll say the most important thing is the story. Freeman Tilden, famous guide and interpreter, kind of made his, etched his way into the industry in the 1950s, the mid to late 1950s. He said the story is the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And by thing, he means the most important part, the integral, the heart, the essence of a tour,
mm-hmm.
or of a heritage site or something like that. The story is the thing. That's what connects people to whatever it is that you're trying to connect them with.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of it being a story, completely agree. I think most people would who are in the industry.
Yeah. So it was starting out the way it was, a little really slow at first, and then it just kept growing. And I was trying to get some help. I was really only running it on Fridays and Saturdays, really. I did try to get some help. This my requirement is you have to be a really good storyteller.
Right.
And during my hiring process, not many people made it through, mostly because our routes are so twisty and confusing and there's so much to memorize, so much to learn. They're like, oh, no, this is too much. Can't do it.
Right. Right. Right.
And then over the years, it really started out as a dark history tour.
Right. Yes.
Talking about massacres and maybe a few sex scandals. But over the years, we've had a few clairvoyants we've had a few sightings. So it gradually started. The ghost element started creeping in.
Right.
And then it started becoming a little more of a ghost story. Now, I would say it's a good balance between history, folklore, and ghost stories.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
a dark tour.
It was not my plan to take us to places where there were ghosts or ghost sightings. Mm. We've had a few of them. Maybe over future podcasts, we'll talk about incidents that have happened.
And I've started to record those, the ones that the claims, I guess I started, I have a year worth of recordings now. So maybe we weren't doing it earlier, but anyway, in the last year, I've been recording alleged sightings had by the guests on the tour.
In fact, last night I had three young ladies on my tour last night, and one spot, and you know the spot I'm talking about, mentioned the next day that she felt very uncomfortable there. And it wasn't just because I was there.
It had nothing to do with the ghosts.
Yeah, nothing to do with me.
She saw a Joe. Yeah, she spotted a Joe.
Yeah, but it's just one place that really makes people uncomfortable or spooked out.
Yeah.
And then later on, a few years ago, Sean got involved. I was teaching Sean the route, and then Sean started taking over. He made it his own, and he actually created almost a pretty much different tour. Same theme. We have a little bit overlap.
A little bit on your regular and my your regular tour and my extended tour. Some overlap, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so Sean generally does the tours on weekdays, and I do it on the weekends now. And if you really like the tour, you should try both our tours. They're very different now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you could do both tours and have a completely different experience. And both of them are great.
And that's not just us saying that. That is a lot of the guests on my tours that have taken both tours and said really, really like both tours.
Right.
Even though most of the positive reviews on TripAdvisor name Sean out in particular.
that could be because I do it more often during the week. So I guess statistically I get more guests. So results in more reviews.
Maybe so.
But this is something I don't think I've ever asked you before. You just said it earlier. Yeah. You had never done like a dark tour before.
Still, I've never been on one. I mean, I've done haunted houses and I used to volunteer at haunted houses as a character. Yeah. That was really fun. And that also got me into that mood, as I missed doing that in my early 20s. It was so much fun to dress up as a creature and scare people. Yeah. That was really fun.
I did that a lot. For everyone listening, I'm from Newfoundland, the east coast of Canada, and the town Carbonear, it's an old historic town, a lot of ghost stories there as well. There's wars fought there between the British and the French, and all kinds of interesting stuff, pirate princesses and things like that all around that area. But they had haunted house for a few years every Halloween in an old building called the Rourke Building.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, was built back in the late 1800s and whatnot. And they used to host, the town would host these haunted houses. And I'd volunteer every year to dress up and walk around the floor and scare the people. I loved it. That stuff is so great. It's so fun. Yeah. I don't know if they still do it. The Rourke, it wouldn't be in the Rourke Building because they eventually just, rightly, they turned it into a museum. I don't know where else they could do it. But I'm not sure if they still do or not. How do you think since the tour came from you wanting to have a genuine Halloween experience that still, in my opinion, you can't have, it's really difficult to have in Korea. Even with all the stuff in Lotte World and whatnot, it doesn't feel like a real genuine Celtic Halloween experience or North American Halloween experience. How do you think Dark Side of Seoul has grown over the years, especially around Halloween? Because in the time that I've been doing the tour, that's mm-hmm. always our busiest time.
It's always been. October is always our busiest month.
Yeah.
Sometimes we get bookings so large that we have to do two tours at the same time.
Yeah.
It gets that big.
Yeah.
And when they get really big, they get very slow. And so we got to speed those up.
There's times when, if the group is really big, and if I have a certain story that I know it will take a little bit long to share it, I either break it down to its, most integral points and share it, or I skip it. Yeah. I've had people on my tours that they've come back and they're like, I'll share a story. I'll stop somewhere and I'll share a story and they'll say, I don't remember that story from last time. It's like, I probably didn't tell it. There's so much information that sometimes the tour night to night can change a little bit.
Yes. Yeah. Sometimes I add extra stories. I have a few extra ones in my back pocket. It depends on the group. Each group is different.
That's right. Yeah. Same. You talked about K-pop there a little while ago. If I know I have people on the tour who are K-pop fans, and I'll get this information from them at the beginning of the tour and we're waiting for everyone to arrive and we'll say, oh, why'd you come to Korea? Oh, the answer is often because of K-pop, K-entertainment. Yeah, there's a bunch of K-pop ghost stories, and I know you share one on your tour. The video.
Yeah, we have a ghost. We have a ghost that was in the background of a K-pop video. Yeah,
back in the 90s. But there's a lot of stuff with that, so I have that in my back pocket. If anyone, I know that's what they'll be interested in, then I'll share it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's nothing that someone can kind of relate to because they're not really into K-pop anyway. I won't share it. So the tours can change.
Yeah.
Yeah. So people can come back and have a different experience every time.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, the guest I had last night, she told me that she was on my tour a few years ago and she's retaking it because she hadn't done the extended. She wanted to try the extended this time.
Okay.
And so,
where was she from?
Germany.
Germany. Okay, cool. Yeah. Well, that's great.
Yeah. And so with the group, sometimes we like to go out for chicken and beer or some type of drink. If we have enough time after the tour, we sometimes do that. So we did last night, and I asked her, like, was it really different? She goes, yeah, some things were the same, but it was really different from before.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's just a great experience. And it's a really great way, I think, dark tourism, doing these kinds of things, it's a great way to learn about aspects of history that governments are not often keen on people sharing. The governments themselves won't really talk about too much.
Yeah.
Or they'll go the opposite direction. And not governments, but or tourism industries or tourism organizations, but the entertainment industry. They'll make a dramatized a version of some sort of specific tragedy that happened in the past or something like that. But then it's sensitized, right? It has that very glossy entertainment feel to it. It's overproduced. Yeah, it doesn't have that grittiness of the actual history.
Yeah, however,
you know the actual history. So, I think a good storyteller telling these kinds of tragic events of the past, these eerie ghost stories and things like that, a good storyteller can do a much better job of sharing these things than any television production. Or any production. That's what humans are built for, telling and listening to stories.
That's what we're hoping to do. We're doing all that on our tours. Now, this is the other thing too, is I just have a good time. I do the tour because I really enjoy it. Even if only one person signs up,
right,
I still do the tour because it's for me personally, it's my therapy. I love the city. It's a great way to this is the other thing that was not expected is some of our reviews have said that we take them. It's a good way to see some of the sites, but in a different way, because we do hit some of the major sites.
Right. Yeah.
So it's a new way of seeing that. And also it's just a good, fun way to learn the history. And this is what really makes me just so tickled in the end when people say that they knew nothing or had no interest in Korean history before they took the tour. And then they started asking, like, what books would you suggest or some things like that?
That's right.
They really got interested. And that's always got me so excited because before, I mean, I've been living in Korea since 2004.
Mm-hmm.
Sean, you've been here longer. And in my early days here, it was not much. A lot of the people that visited Korea or outsiders who lived in Korea just they didn't really, I don't know, how would you say, didn't have as much respect, didn't have, they're kind of not that excited about Korea as compared to our neighbors, Japan and China. But I think it was because they did not have a cultural connection to it. It was most of the usual, do you know kimchi? Do you know dokdo?
Right.
Oh, you use chopsticks well.
Right.
That type of stuff. This is what got things like the tour got people really just interested in Korean culture.
Yeah.
And it's gotten me so excited.
Yeah. No, that, and I think the people in the past, the Westerners in the past who came here and they didn't get any kind of real connection to Korea, they're the ones that always ended up leaving.
Yeah.
If they stayed a long time, it was 5 years.
Yeah.
That was.
Oh, wow. That was long back then. Yeah.
That was ages.
The average stay is 2 years.
Right. Right. I think still, right? Still.
Yeah.
So I think I think almost all of the non-Koreans that you and I know either have some sort of expertise in Korean culture, Korean way of living, whether it be history or
cooking, radio, culture, TV, yeah, radio, entertainment,
media, entertainment. Or they own restaurants, like Tom. Tom, put a plug in for Tom.
Tom's Pizza.
You
might find me there most of the time.
Yeah. A little bit too far for me. I can't go there as often as Joe, but go to Tom's Pizza in Hongdae. They have some sort of connection. And I find if the ones that have the connection to some sort of history or heritage, folklore, culture in some way, they always end up being here for a long time.
Yeah, journalists. I know a lot of journalists here. Yeah, we know a lot of journalists.
Journalists been here for at least 10, 15 years, a lot of them, yeah.
Business people,
yeah, yeah. So, yeah, there's a lot here to see, a lot here to fall in love with. But you have to kind of get into that. You can't just love it. You have to get into it somehow.
Yeah.
And help to promote it. I think I think we do a pretty good job of that.
I would hope so. I mean, what I'm trying to do, and everyone that's on our team, because we don't even just do the Dark Side tour. Sean has a hiking tours, the Soul Hike.
Two
hiking tours. We have other people doing tours on Korean alcohol or certain regions of Seoul. But that my requirements for anyone joining our company, our tour company, is we want you to. Why do you love living here? We want you to show why you love it.
Yeah,
This isn't some type of propaganda trying to give people what they think they want or what they want you to want. Show you what they want to show you. This is all about what is your passion and share your passion with that person. And that's what we do. You can also find us, darksideofseoul.com, but our main page is koreafoodtours.com, not Korean, Korea, foodtours.com. You can also, like I said before, we started a Facebook page. We have an Instagram as well at Dark Side of Seoul.
Yeah, yeah.
But our most active presence is our Facebook page. And Sean's kind of taken it over. Could you tell us more about how the Facebook page has developed?
Well, I guess when I started working there, I'll go right back. I wasn't on Facebook. I didn't have a Facebook account. I stopped using Facebook like 10 years ago.
Oh, I forgot. You are kind of like Mountain Man Jim hiding in the log cabin.
Yeah.
I live on social media.
I live out in the middle of nowhere. I have no problem with all this social distancing because I don't live near almost anyone. So it's fine. When I started working with you, you were kind of like, are you on Facebook? It's like, not really into it. And I can you get on Facebook? But you twisted my arm and I finally got on. And then, I started posting a lot of folklore on there. I'd write up in prose form a lot of old Korean folk tales. I still do that now and again, not as frequently as I was doing last year, but just other things have come up. It's you get busy. I still upload now and again. both of us, if we see something that we think is suitable for the content of the Facebook page, we share it. Links to something sometimes are funny, that can be memes or dark, serial things about serial killers around the world or hauntings around the world, things like right. that. So there's a lot of content going online and then on our Facebook page. And then I can't remember how long ago, maybe about six months ago. What is this? This is almost towards the end of March. Yeah, maybe about 6 months ago. No, more than that. Last summer. Yeah, maybe last summer, August or September. I started every Sunday hosting watch parties on our Facebook page.
And there's a feature we were just playing with, and we're trying to figure out how could we do anything with this. Yeah. I couldn't think of any use for it in my other Facebook pages. Yeah, trying to figure out a way.
Yeah, so just play a horror movie every Sunday night at 10:30 Korean time, PM, and you can watch it live with other people.
In the chat room.
And then you can chat about it in the chat room. We get a lot of our regular viewers coming back, but it's fun. I'll play stuff. I played stuff from the silent era, a bit of a horror movie. Buff, I guess, armchair scholar.
Yes, Sean knows his Korean horror films too.
I recommend several on my tour, and I connect them to things that the history of the folklore that I share on the tours. I've played on the watch party. I've played stuff back from the silent era. I played Nosferatu, Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, all that old silent stuff, the German expressionist horror films from the early 1920s, through to the Universal horror films. Played Frankenstein. I haven't played Dracula yet. Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein, Wolfman, and then through like the Hammer horror films, Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing stuff. Dracula and also Frankenstein from there, and like a lot of the cheesy 80s slasher films. We've done Halloween, a couple of Friday the 13th movies. And I don't play too much from the 80s or the 90s. I think I may have played in total, maybe from the 90s, maybe three or four movies. Not such a big fan of 80s horror movies or of 90s horror movies. 80s, that's kind of where it kind of descends for me.
It's all the makeup effects in the 80s.
Yeah, well, it's great. Tom Savini and stuff like that. You still had Rick Baker at the time. Rick Baker is the Jack Pierce.
I was going to say, that wasn't one of the doctors. That's Tom Baker.
No, Rick Baker, he got his start on The Exorcist. He was an assistant to Dick Smith. Dick Smith was the big special effects guy through the late 60s, 70s, in the 80s as well. And then Rick Baker kind of took the crown, became the first man to win an Academy Award for special effects. And that was for An American Werewolf in London. I do play a lot of Korean horror films as well. We've done Death Bell. That's a favorite of mine. That's a fun movie. What else did we do? There's some Korean ones. Cat's Eye, which is also the name of an American.
Yes, I remember Cat's Eye in America.
American film back in the 80s.
I think Steven Spielberg was involved in that one.
Maybe production.
Producing it.
They play the horror movies from all over the world. It's not always easy getting them online, getting onto Facebook. Sometimes they get flagged. Sometimes I can find them. They're already on Facebook. I'm able to wrap it around and get it onto our page. And something I did about when we started this whole isolation thing that we're in now, I had a Friday night and I played like four or five episodes of Unsolved Mysteries from the 80s.
Yeah.
And I did two last night.
Cool.
The watch party is a great way to bring everyone together. So everyone, 10:30 Korean time, PM, joining to our watch parties every Sunday. Sunday night, 10 PM Korea time.
Right.
And I'm doing more now that everyone's isolated. So
And we're doing a lot more with Dark Side of Soul. We're coming out with a comic book.
Yes.
Sometime this year.
Yep.
Yeah. Tell us a little more about that.
Yeah. So I've long wanted to do more. Okay. First, I've written and published comics in the past. Mostly horror comics. Grew up reading comic books as a kid. Discovered the reprints of Tales from the Crypt around 1990, I guess it was. And then I fully fell in love with horror comics, though I was reading them before. Forbidden Worlds was the first horror
Forbidden comic. Worlds.
Forbidden Worlds from 1956. Issue 57, I think it was. I still have it. It's a long story. Maybe I'll share it in a podcast in the future. Yeah, long loved the comic books medium. I've written comics, like I said, been publishing the medium before. And there are a ton of other Korean folk tales that I would love to share on the tour, but they don't really have an opportunity. It doesn't connect with anything that we pass on the tour route. There's nothing really segue into it. I don't like to jump into a story. I like to segue into the story from the surrounding, of course.
Yeah, make it organic. Yeah,
that's right. And you want to connect where you are with the story, and then the tourists have a better experience. So there's a ton of stuff that I've just studied over the years. A lot of stories I've heard from older people, Koreans. I've done a lot of interviews with older people over the years, where they've told me certain ghost stories and things that they believe that were real. So, and I heard a lot of folktales from these older people that I've spoken to. But I've never had an opportunity to share them on the tour. Mm-hmm. So I thought, I was like, oh, I should probably put a book together of some of these tales that I know that I would love to share with more people. But there are books that have been written by some of our colleagues about Korean folktales last couple of years. So I didn't want to do the same thing. I didn't want to write a book. So I thought, well, I love comic books. It's the medium. It's art with prose or poetry, if you want. And I said that it's a great medium to retell folk tales. Mm-hmm. So I thought that's what I want to do. So came up with the idea, Dark Side of Soul, Weird Tales from Korean Lore. I pitched it to Joe. Joe was like, do it, get it done. And so, yeah, we had a Kickstarter. I partnered with my old friend and artist, Tim Bauer. He's drawing it. Kickstarter, we had the Kickstarter. We were funded in less than 6 days.
Yeah.
In a 30-day campaign. We were funded in less than 6 days. Tim is working on the art now, and we'll have it released this year. Unfortunately, some of our plans, such as Free Comic Book Day, which is the first Saturday of every May, has just been announced that that's being postponed. This happens all over the world.
This is about the coronavirus. It's not us. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Good. Something else. It's something to not blame me for. Okay. That's good.
No. Because of the coronavirus. So Free Comic Book Day is now being pushed back to the summer, I think, if they're planning it. But we did have plans to have a table at Dive Dice, which is a board game and comic book shop in Seoul, near Hwaegi, and the guy who runs it, Joey Kroner, he is the only person in Korea that has a license with Diamond Distribution. So he's the only person that gets the monthly releases of comic books, the small pamphlet size comics, not the long compilations, not the 150, 200 pages, the 20 to 30 page comics that are released every Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
The only one in Korea that has the license to do that. So he's going to have a big Free Comic Book Day thing on Free Comic Book Day. And we are going to have a table there and have our comic there. But Yeah, not going to happen now. They're pushing.
So, everything's been delayed. And that's not, honestly, it's because of this that, you know, this podcast has been on the back of our burner for so long. And our little quarantining has pushed us as like, if we're going to do it, let's just do it now. Let's get it going. Yeah. So silver lining and all that. We're getting it done. So let's talk about podcast. So we'll see what we have planned. This is stuff that's not even on our tours. This is extra stuff, things that might end up on the tour one day. But we have so much material. We have so many things that we just don't always put on the tours. Well, we're going to talk about different, this is timely, we're going to talk about different epidemics in Korea.
Yeah, probably maybe our next episode.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, epidemics in the past. Yeah, serial killers. Maybe do a series.
A lot of people ask us about certain places, so we can talk about supernatural places. Mm-hmm. Of course, we will talk about experiences we've had on the tours. Lots of true crime stuff, like missing persons, serial killers, and also a lot of dark history. I'm the person I'm always reading up on, especially the Joseon Dynasty. It's dark.
It's dark. Very, very dark.
I'm reading another book now written by these Korean scholars, and it's I'm 200 years into the Joseon Dynasty and barely anyone has a natural death.
right.
There's a lot of dismemberment.
There's so much to share. So we have a lot of content for the podcast. So there's this, of course, just being an introductory podcast, let everyone know what we're doing, but there's a lot of good juicy stuff coming later on.
We're gonna have guests on. We're planning to have guests on, and we're gonna have music from Ed, aren't we?
Yes, Ed Povey, old friend of mine, good friend of mine, great music producer. You can find him on Bandcamp, Jeju Digital. Sorry if I'm getting that wrong right now. I think it's Jeju Digital if you search on Bandcamp. He's going to start producing music for the Dark Side of Seoul, eerie, ambient, kind of like horror movie theme music. For us and for you, for everyone that's listening.
Yeah, so we have a lot of things planned, not just the tour. We're expanding to do lots of fun things with Dark Side of Seoul and about Korea's dark side and folklore and true crime and everything. It's going to be fun. So please contact us, follow us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram at darksideofsoul.com, at darksideofsoul. You can go to our website, darksideofsoul.com. Follow us on Facebook. So just search for Dark Side of Seoul on Facebook. Join us. And then, we'll post questions on what you would want us to do podcasts on. We share a lot of information on there.
Yes, absolutely. That's the best place to get in touch with us. It's on Facebook.
All right. Well, thank you, Sean.
Thanks, Joe.
Really good. Everyone, thank you for listening. And have a spooky day.
Good night.
Thank you.